This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Nick Martin. How are you, Nick?
Very well, Chris.
Excellent.
Pleased to be here.
You're from Wine Owners, and Wine Owners offer a platform to help wine merchants, wholesalers manage their business, their wine business. What I want to talk about today is a little bit, something you raised the last couple of chats, about virtual stock. Yep. And I think of having a virtual drink sometimes. You know, if I'm thinking about cutting back, I'll drink lemonade. It's like a virtual wine, but not really. But that's not what we're talking about, are we?
No, we're not. And we're not even talking about virtual worlds. We're talking about ways of basically managing working capital intensity. In other words, how can you build a product-based proposition without tying all of your cash up in stock?
And stock is expensive. I remember when we first started looking at the wine business, the first thing we thought was, oh, we'll import some wine and we'll flog it. And then we looked at how much money you need to tie up in stock. And then we looked at sort of, oh, the restaurant trade, we'll sell wine to the restaurant trade. And then we realized that actually they don't like to pay their bills. They like to use you as a capital buffer for them. And, you know, it landed up being quite an expensive business to hold stock.
Absolutely. And it's probably more challenging than it was 25, 30 years ago because the cost of the stock has risen.
Mm.
And so what felt natural back in, you know, the 90s and the noughties isn't necessarily the case today. That's not to say that there are not people who are stockholders and who place great virtue on being a stockholder, and that gives them a certain amount of market power. But it also means there are lots of other businesses that need to think a bit more circumspectly about what is part of their stock position and what isn't part of the stock position that they would still like to be able to offer to their customers. And that's where virtual stock comes in.
Can you give us an example of maybe two or three different business models that might use virtual stock?
Yeah. So,
or businesses even, if I don't mind naming them.
I shall not name businesses, if that's okay. But for people in the wine trade who are doing business, they'll be thinking about names, I'm sure, as we speak. But certainly, you know, virtual stock may be at its most simplest from an importer who has pre-allocated a certain amount of stock for a certain period of time and invited a merchant retailer to sell through within that period of time.
So they haven't bought the wine. They've just said, look, you can have 100 cases of this, and if you sell it within the year, that's great.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, for that to work, obviously, you need to be guaranteed the quantities that you've been proposed, because in background, you know, those stock positions are going to be moving around all over the place. So you need that locked in. That's the most basic old school way of doing it. Problem is that, you know, it's got its limitations, i.e. there's no concept of keeping a allocation up to date, and you've got a certain amount of time within which to get through it. Another example is the traditional list sharing behavior that's very typical to the wine trade. So, you know, there's a, let's say, Italian importer who has a strong stock position within, say, Piedmont and Tuscany. And there's another wine merchant that knows the Italian specialist and would like access to their list to be able to go through it and figure out what might work for some of their customers. And I'll give them a call, or, you know, they'll send them an email and they'll hopefully receive the stock position and they'll try and get through it. These guys can spend hours looking through lists that are provided from other people. Again, in order to figure out what's still in stock and what's gone, you need to be making that request time and again. That's another virtual stock type.
So this is where I'm a wine retailer, you're a wine retailer, you've got a load of wines from Piedmont. I haven't got any wine from Piedmont, so I go, look, I want to offer these five wines on my list, and then I'll buy the wines from you when I sell them. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, yep. Exactly. We saw this as a trend, you know, because of market fundamentals, because of the cost of wine, because of the cost of carry, because not everybody can afford to be a stockholder in the traditional sense of the word. And we very much designed the workflows within the hub around that. And so rather than send someone a list or, you know, have your allocations sent to you via an Excel file, we make that easier by essentially a workflow within the business management platform that's organizing your business that is very distinct and very different from your own stock position, that essentially generates a sales order off a virtual stock quantity that then in turn generates a purchase order off that, that can either be immediately sent to the supplier or together over a period of time and then sent all as one consolidated purchase order. And then as we kind of got into this a bit more and we started to realize just how much time people were burning wanting to take advantage of other people's stocks, but finding it difficult to manage, we came up with a new kind of workflow whereby people who are on the same platform on the hub, as 80 odd businesses on the hub today, and we're bringing people on a rate of, I guess, about 3 a month, HubLink, as we're calling it, will make it possible for a business to determine what stock they want to share of their own stock, of their own physical stock holding, at what price they want to share it for, and determine specifically who they want to share it with. So if I'm Falcon Wines and I want to share with Tom Mann or Brunswick, I'm good with that because I know them and I trust them and I want to work with them. But I don't necessarily want to share my stock with all comers. So, you know, it's very different to a sort of marketplace type model. It's very much a one-to-one relationship driven permission-based agreement to share stock in a very systemized way. So now all of a sudden, once you've agreed that you're going to share your stock position with somebody else, you don't need to worry about updating it. They don't need to worry about asking you for a refresh each time, and they don't need to have to go through the whole starting from scratch and reviewing what's on the list and figuring out what might be suitable for their customers or not. So it becomes essentially a virtual live stock feed.
Yep.
That again starts with a sales order, generates a purchase order, which in turn triggers an invoice from the stockholding business. Yeah. And, you know, I think that's a natural path that we've been led down over the last 4 years to get to the point where not only can businesses work with virtual stock because there are workflows to manage that, but actually it's practical to do so, and the risk of selling something that might be gone is obviously completely mitigated.
There's some websites, I think is it Every Wine, and they literally offer that's what they do. I don't think they hold any stock or virtually any stock, and they just offer other people's lists on their website.
That's one model. I mean, there are e-commerce models like that. There are brokerage models like that as well. There are marketplace models like that. Mm. A couple of virtual stock examples might be Crew Wine, based in Singapore. Crop and Vine is another good example, who operate a high virtual stock model. The reality is that there's always some blending. There is almost no business that's pure. It might be that the Every Wine model was pure, but I suspect that everybody's a blend. It's just a question of what kind of blend makes sense given what your proposition is to your audience, to your addressable market.
Yeah. How the people who own the stock, for example, in fine wine, you get a lot of people who will purchase on Premier, trade on the markets, etc. They're effectively stockholders.
They are.
And then they're selling their stock to... Normally it's through brokerage though, usually,
exactly,
isn't it?
Exactly. And brokerage, or consignment as it's typically called in the US, is another form of essentially virtual stock, other than obviously it's a model that's been around for a very long time, and clearly collectors need that relationship with those merchants in order to be able to sell through. And the merchants in turn either have the capacity to do so themselves, or they do so through relationships like Livex.
Is there any other virtual models that you're aware of?
We've covered stock sharing, we've covered pre-allocations, we've covered consignment. I guess, you know, going forward, looking at importers, I think looking at the relationship between importers and their channels of distribution, in a world where it's tougher and tougher to get listed, to get your wines on the list, essentially becoming lenders of working capital, which is effectively what you are if you're allowing a channel distribution to pre-sell wines that you are then able to supply to them the following day, is another form of virtual stock sharing. It's a little similar to a pre-allocation, but a little bit different.
There's some merchants or wineries that I'm aware of that in the past anyway, who have shipped wine to a merchant, still owned the wine and not had payment until the wine's been sold on. That's an example where a winery is supplying wine as a virtual supplier.
Very
as
much
well.
So.
Would you say it's common or becoming more common, or is it becoming less common? What's the trend?
I believe the trend is that it is becoming more common, that even stockholders who continue to see themselves as stockholders will look at some form of virtual stock depending on the opportunity. And the more that we make it easy to manage those virtual stock feeds and the relationships without causing lots of kind of manual work and kind of introducing new inefficiencies into the business, the more I think people will engage with virtual stock sources.
I suppose ultimately, though, someone is putting cash down and using that cash to hold on to stock, and it has that time value of money going on there. So there's a cost associated with it.
Yes.
If you see an increase in the levels of virtual stock keeping,
so
you get more entrants and people are very efficient because they're not holding stock.
Yeah.
The people who are holding stock, they're going to want their money back. You know, in the old days when someone bought a couple of, you know, a pallet of wine from somewhere and they held on to it for a couple of years and their seller waiting for the time to come and then flog it, they were really, well, I know of some wine businesses that weren't that professional about it. They were just holding the stock for years and years and years and then dribbling it out, selling it very slowly. But they weren't really thinking about the time cost of money. They were thinking, yeah, I've got this wine and I'm going to sell it at a price later on.
And I think the market will answer that question ultimately. In other words, the market will tell you whether you have sufficient pricing power to be able to charge a premium as a stockholder. And there will be stock lines that work in that regard and maybe other stock lines that just don't work.
What wines do work? Because it can't be entry level.
Nope.
And the super premiums, I suppose you could do that through brokerage, but why, you know, with markets like Livex, anybody who's dabbling in that market will be going to a platform to buy those wines rather than through a merchant necessarily. Mm-hmm. So where is the sweet spot for this type of product?
So we will tend to shy away from the kind of the yellowtail end of the market, just because at that end of the market, it's consumer product. You know, it happens to be a bottle of wine, but it could be anything.
Detergent.
Right. It could be a bottle of olive oil, detergent, whatever. And for that sort of business, I don't believe that that business needs an industry-specific platform to manage what it does. It can just use a generic inventory manager that it plugs into Sage, like Unleashed or Deere Systems. It's much cheaper, much more generic, of course, but it'll do. By definition, the market that we focus upon tends to be the more premium market.
But not super premium? Or?
No, I mean, it's a broad spread. It's a broad spread from South African wines that are knocking around 15, 16 quid wholesale upwards, all the way up to, you know, brokers dealing in the top end of the market. I would say that in terms of the practice around virtual stock, again, thinking about importers as part of that, as you quite rightly prompted me on earlier, means that the spread's quite a big spread because there are different drivers for why someone would want virtual stock from an importer versus a virtual stock feed for fine wines at the top of the market. But I think that the application is there in both those cases. So I would argue that the opportunity is quite broad, but the opportunity between, say, an importer and a retailer around mid-price African wines is a very different application of virtual stock to looking at Bordeaux first growths or top-end Burgundies or whatever.
Yeah. I can imagine if you wanted to offer a complete range of wines, not every wine, but a good range of wines, and you know some wines just don't sell through fast. That would be a great wine for a virtual wine. You know, if you've got a fast-moving product, you probably want to hold the stock yourself because then it gives you speed and it also means you've got confidence that you're going to sell through and you're not going to have bin-ins that you need to manage. Whereas if you've got, I don't know, a wine that might be you want to have on your list, I mean, like a Jura wine, for example, or something like that where it's a niche wine. No one wants to get stuck with too much.
Put it on your list because you personally adore it, probably.
Yeah, but you don't necessarily want to have a lot of that stock, and bringing a consignment in from Jura might be a bit too much. So you want to be able to maybe...
Working with an importer or an agency business around that sort of stock, if they're happy to, essentially, to your point, lend you the stock for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Makes perfect sense.
Are there other examples like that, or?
So yeah, I think that there are people who will look at Bordeaux, for example. You know, maybe it's not the hottest thing right now, but if there's an interesting parcel of an older range of vintages that can be consumed now, that's ready to go, if you like, in principle. A merchant will take the view that that sort of stock is selling through better than new releases these days, considerably better. There's more demand for it.
Mm.
But they still might not necessarily have a settled view in terms of where the market is. Yeah, the market's falling, prices have come down. Are we at the bottom? Or are we close to the bottom? Or what's going to happen next? Yeah. And according to that, do you really want to buy that stock and be left holding it if, you know, the demand isn't quite as good as you thought it was and prices continue to fall? That might be another use case.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, no, that's true as well, isn't it? So on a rising market, you want to hold stock. Well, you might want to because then you get the capital growth. But on a falling market, you just want to have it on your list and then get it when you need it. Yeah, that makes sense. All right, Nick, I think that's quite an interesting look. I've never really thought about virtual stocks before, but that's something that's, I know you've built Wine Owners Hub to deal with that type of thing.
We've built the hub around your own stock, other people's stock, the different workflows that go along with that, the mechanisms for being able to manage and keep those stock positions live and up to date, and then the relationship between those stock positions and your sales channels, whether online or, you know, over the phone or whatever. So that's the kind of the omni-channel, multi-channel piece that we think is really important to be able to address all of the different business models that are out there in the market. And in turn, it's what leads us to always end up talking about mastering data, because you need all of those different data types mastered and kept up to date in one place that can be easily allocated to different sales channels where the depletion of stock positions takes place instantly.
Real time, yeah.
And therefore you're able to manage a complex proposition in a modern world and not worry about overselling or anything like that.
Just one last question. Wine Owners Hub, do you do spirits and beer in there?
We've recently done a new spirits database release. So, you know, we found that a lot of wine merchants were getting more and more into spirits over the last couple of years. Margin spirits has proven to be much better than in wine.
There's a lot of limited release spirits coming out.
Yeah. So we've now got a enlarged database that encompasses spirits and wine. We don't have the same depth of pre-filled referential data, as we do with wine, but the structures are there. It's and we have whiskey businesses and spirits businesses and wine businesses that have significantly got into spirits on it as well.
Excellent. All right then, Nick, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.